What were the names of the trees my father said goodbye to?
Welcome to the Poetry Magazine podcast. I'm Ashley M. Jones. Poems have this way of speaking directly to the issues of my heart, exactly when I need it. This week, Joanne Belinget and I talk about where poetry lives in the face of loss and grief. And poetry also lives in the space between the personal and the public. Her intimate approach to poetry has had to also consider a wider audience in her tenure as poet laureate. When Belinget received a request from the Philippine Embassy to write a poem, she said yes, but not without pause. The poem was to mark the 75th anniversary of Philippine-American relations. As Belinget put it, this was a fraught request about a troubled relationship. Her response was to write a tanaga, a Filipino poetic form, alongside three other poets who also wrote tanagas for the embassy marking the occasion. All four poems are in the current issue of Poetry. In the poem, Belinget asks, "What were the names of the trees my father said goodbye to?" Her father left the Philippines when he was 26 years old, never to return or see his family again. Belinget helped me see the way our loved ones can live on in those branches, in the syllables that make a line of poetry. In this conversation, we explore the difficulties and joys of her service as Delaware's poet laureate and what it was like to receive a poetry assignment from the Philippine Embassy.
What the assignment made me think about was my father, as an immigrant, was very determined to be seen as an American. And that meant to him speaking English, being like everyone else, which in his time meant white America. And I never heard him speak his language. And even though I haven't learned my ancestral languages, I feel them in my body. Like, I feel like there's an identity in me that would have been partially expressed through language that will always be an energy inside me that wants to be expressed.
Here is Tanaga, song where every Filipinx person is standing by the ocean.
My Filipino father's art was to christen each child with a mother's memory, held close over centuries, while he held at ocean's length his birthplace, his riverbank, and the language I don't speak. Yet I'm at home in his name, always at home in the world, when the trees sing, "Hello, leaves," when the earth sings, "Goodbye, leaves," when inside me I feel words I cannot sing, "Speak to me." What were the names of the trees my father said goodbye to? When my father died, I sang a lullaby. Goodbye words, hello songs I cannot sing. Goodbye words inside a score, the ocean keeps on singing. And I said to her, "Mothers?" And I said to her, "Fathers?" And she said to me, "They hear." And they said to me, "We hear."
Wow. Thank you so much, Joanne. I'm pausing because even though I've read this poem several times, it's kind of hitting me a little differently right now, hearing it in your voice. I recently lost my father. And this poem, it comforts me in a way that I can't quite put words to. So I really, truly thank you for this piece. And I wonder if you could talk about what this poem has meant to you.
I'm so happy to hear you say that the poem gives you comfort for the loss of your father. I'm sorry for your loss. And this poem came really quickly to me. When that line, "What were the names of the trees my father said goodbye to," came to me, I understood that knowing the language was also through the naming of the trees and everything he saw as he grew up as a young man who left forever his homeland when he was 26 years old and never went back and never saw his family again. So I realized that keeping his name throughout my life, I have never changed my father's name, my maiden name, was one of the ways that I was trying to connect with that part of my ancestry, like the living energy in me that wants to be Filipino when I've never felt that I could be because I was born here and did not get that cultural training, so to speak, connections, family connections through him. But also, I understood that when he left Macabebe, the village where he was born, Pampanga, the province, he left behind all the trees, the animals, the people, the land that had nurtured him. So not knowing the names of the trees makes it even more difficult for me to connect to who he was and therefore who I am. And the poem is about searching for how to be home when I've always felt that I was not quite ever home because I'm a mixed race person. I'm Filipino, yet I don't know the culture. I'm American, yet people have approached me for much of my life as if I am not because I look Filipino. And I found that just by acknowledging that there are songs inside me, even if I can't sing them, that's enough of a connection, because through being the daughter of this man, I am, as I say, at home in his name. I'm already there. That was a very long answer.
No, that was wonderful. I was just soaking it up, Joanne, honestly. I was taking notes also as you talked, because the last thing that you said is kind of where I arrived when I read the poem, that the poem itself, first of all, is that bridge and is a way home or to get back to your father. And then also the fact that the poem and your body, like you said, they both know those trees and they know those songs, even without being able to name them. And the trees are still there. That's something I wrote down. Like, even if we don't know their names, they are there. And like I said, that just spoke to me so clearly because of what I'm going through right now. You know, my dad is not here, but I have his name and I don't want to change it. You know, I've never had the opportunity to do so yet, but I have to keep it, you know, now. And his garden in our backyard is still here. It's still bearing fruit. Even though I don't know how to garden like he did, I don't know the names of all the flowers or the trees like he did. Those things are there. And because I can see them and think about them, he is also there. So anyway, this poem did all of that for me. And this is why I love poetry so much, because I think it can speak so much more exactly than anything else. For me, when I write, it's the manifestation of my actual heart. Like, I can't put it into real words. I can't hand it to people, but I can put it in a poem somehow. And so that's the connection that I felt with this piece. So thank you again for writing it. And I'm so interested about that it was a request from the embassy, which seems such a cold, you know, unfeeling thing, and yet it produced this amazing poem. And you also were poet laureate. This is a question I had not thought to ask you, but I really am now curious. Since you've had to deal with poetry as it relates to the government, I guess, what does that feel like? Does it always feel, you know, kind of strange, or have you found ways, did you find ways as Poet Laureate to sort of make it warmer?
That was so beautiful for me to hear that the poems you write with your heart. But yeah, so being Poet Laureate is being a government representative. And as such, I would get commissions and requests, and I often felt like I had to not censor myself, but be aware of a wider audience. Because I was Poet Laureate of Delaware, I wondered to myself, well, what is my responsibility to the governorship and the legislature and the people of Delaware? The Delaware Constitution says that the Poet Laureate serves at the pleasure of the governor, that antiquated language. But I found that I couldn't not be me, and I wanted also to convince as many people as possible to try poetry. How I saw being Poet Laureate was, I just want to be out there and show everyone that a poet is a person who wants to write and talk about her story and get people to connect with each other by sharing their stories. And I'm a real person. I'm not like a dead person who is black and white print in a textbook. I walk, I talk, and I laugh, and we can goof off, and I, you know, spend a lot of time in classrooms. But the government connection was always there, and I found that I could not do the official commissions without being myself. So one of the first official appearances that I was asked to do was to present a poem at the governor's prayer breakfast. You know, it's a huge meeting event in a very large hall. It was in Dover, the capital of Delaware. There were senators and representatives, the delegation, you know, the national delegation was there, several state legislators and lots of military, many religious leaders, people from all over the community. And I saw the program and they said, okay, you will be on at this time. And it was so cool. I came on between two gospel groups, so there was like rousing music. And the poem, I had tried to write a prayer. It was a prayer breakfast. But what had just happened was that the BP oil spill happened. And everyone that I knew that lived in Florida, where I grew up, was terrified. And millions of gallons of oil were streaming into the beautiful Gulf. And I wrote Prayer for the Gulf, and that was what I was thinking about. And I realized that at the time, the governor was considering an act to open up oil drilling off the coast of Delaware. So the poem, I suppose, was a little controversial to read, but the people that came up to me and said thank you in the parking lot when I left were all local people from Dover, folks that just said, I'm so worried about what we're doing to our environment, and thank you for reading that poem. The officials didn't respond, but I knew that my job was to talk to, you know, what was in my heart about the world at large.
Yeah, I mean, it's very inspirational to hear that even in a room full of all those, you know, dignitaries or whatever we want to call them, people who wear suits and make laws, you know, that you would still say, by the way, here's where you're wrong, you know, which I think is great. I mean, that's what poets do. We're here to tell the truth. And I wrote down while you were talking, a poet is a person. A poet is a person. And I thought you could stop the sentence right there. I mean, you went on to say other things about us that are person-like, you know, we are, as you said, not dead. There are many of us who are alive. And I did not realize that you grew up in Florida, which is exciting. It means you're a Southerner, technically. Although I don't know that Florida is often said to be a part of the South proper, I guess. I'm from Alabama. That's where I still live. And I spent 3 years in South Florida for grad school, which is maybe not this same country anyway. Do you consider yourself Southern at all?
You know, I always have wondered what Florida was. For example, if I see a call for submissions that say Southern writers, I always wonder to myself, do I belong there? Am I really Southern? And then it's that problem again. Where do I live? Like, I grew up in Florida, but I wasn't born there. I was born in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Filipino, but I'm also white American through my mother, German or Alsatian. I don't live in Florida. I feel like, my parents died when I was 16, and I stayed in Florida through the age of 21 when I finished college. But the question that is in this poem, even if it's not overt, is what is home? Where is my home? I've lived in Delaware longer than I've ever lived anywhere, and I traveled a lot throughout my 20s and moved a lot, just like my parents moved our family a lot. I've lived in Delaware since 1990. How long is that? Is that 30 years?
It's been 30 years. I was born in 1990. 31 years, I guess, this year.
Whoa. I'm old. But so I think, well, Delaware must be my home. It's been so good to me. I'm like my writing career really came to me in Delaware. It's nurtured me. But then I will hear people saying, I'm a native Delawarean, born and raised here. And I think to myself, native, what's my nativity? So when you say you consider yourself Southern, I think, yes. But then I think, will they let me in that club? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome into the club.
Yay.
Please come into it. I do want to ask you about collaboration and community. It struck me when I first saw this group of poems that it was a group, you know, of poems. In our field, it's so prevalent that we strike out on our own and it's all about, you know, what we can get alone. But I find, especially when working in the community, that the togetherness is really where the strength lies. And that's really what the project of poetry is, as you said earlier, to create connection. So I wonder if you could talk about the place that you see community playing in the national poetry landscape, or if you have a vision for more connectedness in the future, anything in that vein.
Oh, wow. So I am a writer who spent a lot of time alone for many years trying to find my community, which I did finally find. And I, shout out to all the writers in Delaware. We're a small community. We all know each other. But I was spending a lot of time on my own. I didn't do an MFA. I taught myself to write poetry while my kids were little and running around the house. I went to the library. But I have to say, during the past year, the isolation of the pandemic really was amazing for me in terms of the writing community and collaboration, because of everything that was happening on Zoom. I suddenly, any day of the week, you could attend a reading, you could attend an open mic. I write together with so many amazing writers who I've just met in the past 18 months. I have learned so much from them. I have learned how good I am, more confidence, less fear, putting myself out there, being willing to step up and say, let's do this thing, leadership, exchange, all while sitting in my study by myself. I wasn't alone. I wasn't by myself anymore. So, man, like, writers know how to get together.
Yes.
What a blessing. What a wealth of knowledge and heart, as you said in the beginning. Mm-hmm.
You know, in my pre-pandemic life, I was always in airports, going everywhere, doing everything. And somehow over the pandemic year, I did feel more connected because it wasn't a superficial sort of connection. You know, I think we definitely, in the before times, would physically be together, but mentally and spiritually would not be together at all. And during the pandemic, because we were literally facing the threat of death, sickness, you know, all these very scary things every single day. Anytime we connected, it was real, you know. Or because we didn't have our bodies there, there had to be more that reached across the screen. I hope that coming out of, also in air quotes, out of the pandemic, because I think it's a longer haul than many of us want to admit, I hope that we can continue that sort of connectedness, because it was really beautiful and made way for, I think, just a warmer, nicer, kinder poetry community. So hopefully that continues.
I'm at home in his name, always at home in the world, when the trees sing, hello, leaves, when the earth sings, goodbye, leaves.
It's clear that you have taken on the role of mentor in the lives of a lot of people, students, as you've mentioned, the residents of Delaware as Poet Laureate, and your own children. And it strikes me as interesting that, you know, you suffered the loss of your elders, your mentors, your parents so early, and yet you are able to engage in this way in so many people's lives now. And I wonder if there is a connection there, or, you know, how do you feel? Can you talk about that role of mentoring and if that loss has informed it in any way?
Of course it has. The loss of my parents when I was 16 became also the loss of my younger siblings. I was in a family of 11 children, and eventually that year my siblings were fostered, and I lived with a foster family, and then I was on my own. And of course that loss is always a heartbeat in my work, and that heartbeat there, that knowledge that everyone is walking through their lives with some sort of deep grief, is something I'm aware of as I'm writing, because writing and reading saved me, helped me figure out what to do next. And since I know that there is that avenue, that way to get through, that writing and reading and connecting with the greater conversation is, that it's available, I, in my teaching and my writing, am always aware that there's someone who will read the poem and realize something about themselves that they didn't know, that helps them get up the next day, take the next step, and maybe try to write through in order to understand what you're going through, and in the long run, how it connects you to your humanity and therefore other people's humanity, and how valuable that is. What a gift self-knowledge is, because it makes you more aware of how valuable you are to other people and they are to you. When I'm in front of a classroom, there's so many children sitting in front of me, and at first they're kind of shy, and I was so shy. I was so afraid of writing or expressing or speaking aloud when I was in high school. Oh my gosh. So I'm very gentle with them, and we'll do a couple of free writes. But if I can get one student to raise her hand and say, okay, I'll share, then all their hands shoot up on the second go-round. Okay, who's next? Because they rarely get the opportunity to listen to each other talk about themselves and their own stories. And they're so excited. Like, oh, we get to talk about what happened to us. Mm-hmm. And does that loss come into play there while I'm teaching students? Yeah, it does, because I realize how much people need each other to get through. If you can articulate the songs you cannot sing, that's what brings us together. That sounds corny, but hey, poetry can be corny. I'm okay.
Yeah, thank you. I think people think this podcast is for the world at large, but honestly, these episodes I've done have just been speaking directly to me. Like, everyone I've spoken to, I don't know how y'all know what I'm going through every single time I get on this recording. I don't know how, but you know, and you speak directly to what I need. Thank you, Joanne, for that. And I will just keep rereading your poem over and over and over.
Thank you so much, Ashley. It moves me so much to hear you say that poem feels important to you, especially in the grief you're going through right now. That's the reason I write. I want to make that connection, and I want us all to know that we're here. We go through all of this together. So yeah, that's why I write. For the folks out there that think they're sitting alone, not alone.
Joanne Balingit is the author of Words for House Story and two poetry chapbooks. Recent prose appears in About Place Journal, The Common, and the Asian American Literary Review Book of Curses. Balingit served as Poet Laureate of Delaware from 2008 to 2015. You can read Tanaga, Song Where Every Filipinx Person is Standing by the Ocean, in the July-August issue of Poetry, as well as listen to the poem on our website. If you're enjoying the Poetry Magazine podcast, let us know. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not yet a subscriber to the magazine, there's a special rate for podcast listeners. For a limited time, you can get a full year of the magazine for $20. That's 11 book-length issues for just $20. Visit poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer to subscribe. That's poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer. This show is produced by Rachel James. The music in this episode came from Reservoir, Alabaster de Plume, Rob Mazurek, and Irreversible Entanglements. All these songs were released by the Chicago-born record label International Anthem. All right, that's it, y'all. Until next time, be well, stay safe, and thanks for listening.